Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to begin the program today by taking a look at plant diseases. Vegetables, we're going to zero in a little bit to start the show on vegetables, but we can talk about other types of plant diseases as well that are affecting us here in the state, both the home gardeners and the homeowners and the commercial growers out there, especially for tomatoes and potatoes, because late blight's here and it's creating some issues we wanted to talk with you about. Amanda Gevins, one of our guests today, Brian Huddleston, the other. They are both a plant pathologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Brian's been with us lots of times, and Amanda's with us for the first time, so great to have her along. She really zeroes in on potatoes and other vegetables as well, tomatoes too, so glad to have them both here. You may have a question as we go along here about disease or maybe a question about something that's affecting your plants. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Brian, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Good to be here.
And Amanda, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Late blight has reared its ugly head in Wisconsin. You've been out looking in the fields around the state, and we have it.
Yes, that's right. So I've both been getting samples in from county extension agents and home gardeners, and getting calls from commercial pest scouts and from growers, and myself doing a bit of scouting out among potato and tomato fields in the state. And to date, we have five counties where we have confirmed the late blight pathogen on either tomato or potato crops. Our first two finds came on the same day, July 14th, mm-hmm. at a lucky day. The first find was in a potato field in Marquette County. And the second find, just later that afternoon, I had received a call from a county agent in Waukesha County. And there we had our first report on tomato from a home garden. So from that find, it took well over a week before we then had additional three counties added to our list of finds. And it was the 23rd of July, that Friday, when we had an addition of three counties, one with potato and two with tomato.
And there could be more counties out there, I would expect. Brian, what does it look like?
Oftentimes what I look for when I get a sample in are kind of darkish, almost black, kind of water-soaked lesions. So the tissue will look very watery. And then what I'm looking for is the organism sporulating, typically on the undersurface of the leaf. You get this kind of white, fuzzy material that you can see, and I mount it up under the microscope, and there are a couple of characteristics that I look for to do a confirmation. That's when we see it on the leaves. We can also see it on tomato fruits, and then you get kind of a brownish, leathery sort of look, yeah. area. Oftentimes, I see kind of a wave pattern along the edge of the infected area that almost looks like waves washing up on the beach. And then again, what I'll look for is sporulation on the surface of the fruit. And sometimes we have to actually try to grow it out on a special media to get it to sporulate for us. So sometimes it takes a couple days. If we're lucky in terms of the confirmation process, the fungus will be sporulating when we get. I shouldn't call it a fungus because technically it isn't anymore.
It's fungal-like.
That's right. Fungus-like. I'm stuck back, 30 years ago when I was in school. It's a water mold technically, and I tend to call it a fungus. But in any event, if we're lucky in terms of confirming the organism, we'll see it doing its thing right away, and we can immediately confirm it. But sometimes it takes a little bit longer.
So if we have this, let's say, I've got some tomato plants at home, and I actually looked at them pretty carefully this morning before I came in, and they really look healthy. Mine look great. But if home gardeners or commercial folks see it in their crop, they've got to get rid of it, don't they? I mean, they've got to remove the plants.
Right. So there are different management recommendations depending upon the circumstance. And for a home gardener that may just have, five plants in the yard, if you find the plant to be infected and it is confirmed to be late blight, there's not much that can be done. In fact, if greater than, 20% of the plant is showing symptoms, that plant can't be cured. You can't prevent and limit that continued spread. So the best approach and recommendation is to remove that plant from the garden. And that removal can be as simple as just pulling the plant up out of the ground, putting it in a black plastic bag, and letting it out in the sun when that pokes out from the clouds.
Whenever the sun comes out.
That heat inside the bag will effectively kill the plants, and once the plant is dead, the pathogen will die with it. It's a, what we refer to as an obligate pathogen, meaning it can only stay alive when that plant is alive.
And it's important, I guess, for us to do that because, let's say, if you're in an agricultural area, excuse me, or a rural area and you're a home gardener, that can spread to somebody else's plant. Well, urban or rural, I guess, it can spread to somebody else's plant if it's not taken care of.
Absolutely. So lay blight is considered a community disease, meaning that every infected plant contributes to overall disease pressure and overall heightened risk for additional gardeners and the commercial industry. So control of this on a small scale in a backyard garden and in a large, 60 acre or more field of potatoes is critical.
Yeah. And I know I was talking to A.J. Busson, a horticulturist here at the UW, and he was saying, it could cost potato growers another $12 million to try and treat for it if it gets out there and starts spreading.
And one of the things we really want to limit is having the organism survive locally here in Wisconsin, because we can end up with the disease occurring much earlier in the growing season than what we have traditionally seen at the last couple of years. So I think, Amanda, would you agree that probably the inoculum came in from out of state again this year? Is that your spin on things?
Yes, given the circumstances this year, we do monitor environmental conditions which favor the late blight pathogen, and we have a forecasting system that lets growers know when environmental conditions would favor late blight. And the only missing piece of that is the pathogen, the presence of the pathogen. And we had conditions favoring disease earlier in the month of June. So the fact that we didn't see it then indicates that the pathogen likely was not present and that it's come in aerially on air moving into the state from other regions.
Yeah. Well, Gary in Berlin has an issue and question about his tomatoes. So let's find out. Gary, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. My tomato plants on the bottom leaves, this started probably a month ago. They turn yellow with little black specks on them, dark specks, and eventually they die. That's my question. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a...
That's not late blight, though, is it?
Probably not, based on the description. And this is a disease that we've been seeing a lot of because people are concerned about late blight and they are seeing this particular disease. It's most likely, based on the description, one of two things. Have you seen any symptoms on the fruits of your plant or is it only on the leaves?
Only on the leaves so far. Also my pepper plants.
Okay. Well, the peppers may be something slightly different. My guess on the tomatoes is that it's possibly Septoria leaf spot, which is another type. It's a fungal disease. It's very common. We see it in home gardens quite commonly. If you've got it occurring both on peppers and tomatoes, there is a possibility that it could be a bacterial disease, though, and that would really entail getting a sample into a place like my clinic in order for me to look at it and do a confirmation. And just to mention, we are offering free checks on tomatoes for late blight. And we'll also, if it's not late blight, we'll tell you that. And we'll also comment on any other diseases that we can find. And that's a free diagnosis. So
how do they do that?
Just if you go to my website, which is pddc.wisc.edu, you can find directions on how to send in a sample. And we'll send a report back to you and let you know what you're dealing with. But I'm guessing it's probably Septoria leaf spot that tends to start on the bottom leaves and then move its way up and cause a lot of defoliation. And usually you don't see symptoms on the fruits with that particular disease. If you have one of the bacterial pathogens, you oftentimes do see spotting on the fruits. One of the things we recommend for that for home gardeners is definitely good fall cleanup of any of your old tomato plants to get rid of any of that infected debris. And we always recommend folks rotate their tomatoes to another area of their garden just as a general principle. Oftentimes doesn't help a lot with this particular disease because the spores tend to get up in the air or splash onto the plants. Space your tomatoes much farther apart, as far apart as you possibly can, to get good airflow in between the plants, because once the leaves get wet, you want those leaves to dry as quickly as possible. Wet foliage tends to be a very favorable environment for the Septoria fungus. Do not overhead irrigate. So if you're using a sprinkler system, that can be bad news for this particular pathogen. Use a soaker hose so you get the water into the soil. We also recommend mulching around the base of tomatoes. And quite frankly, I tend to recommend mulching over the area where you had tomatoes last year, because you want to create a physical barrier so if any of that pathogen is left in little bits of old plant debris in the soil, you don't get that splashing or blowing up from the soil. And then if you're desperate, there are fungicide options that you can use, but usually I don't recommend those for home gardeners. Although if you're treating for late blight, a lot of the products that you're using for late blight should provide some control for Septoria leaf spot if you get them on early enough.
Oh, there you have it.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Next year is another year.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. And I want to go back. The website that people should go to, what's that again?
It's PDDC, short for Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic, .wisc.edu.
All right, so there you have it. Thank you very much, Gary, for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Katie emailed in and wondered whether or not late blight can affect zucchini. My healthy zucchini died within a couple of days. The leaves have a powdery mildew look. Amanda, what do you think?
No, the late blight pathogen, it can go to a number of plant types within the solanaceous or the nightshade plant family, but it will not spread to cucurbits or squash hosts. Likely what she's had, she's given us a clue there that there was some powdery or talcum-like sporulation on the plant, and powdery mildew did rear its head in the state probably about a month earlier than normal. So likely she had a variety with some sensitivity, susceptibility to powdery mildew, and it was infected early, and probably is what created her yellow leaves and death of the plant.
All right, thanks for that email. Let's turn to Tom in Glendale. Tom, hello to you.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Oh, I guess I'd like to shift gears here and ask about blackberries. I have a lot of fruit that they're not altogether black. There's some of the drupelets, I guess they're called, are actually beige or white.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's causing that.
Yeah, there are several things that could potentially be causing that sort of symptom. Sometimes we see some environmental factors that will cause those sorts of symptoms. If the parts of the fruit are exposed to the sun, we can get some actual sunburn sorts of symptoms. We do see some insect pests that can cause that sort of problem. There's I think it's tarnish bug that's involved sometimes in causing some fruit problems. We do see some fungal pathogens that will infect individual drupelets and cause them to turn white. There's also a virus that's actually, I believe, nematode transmitted that can eventually lead to kind of a blotchy sort of look to the fruit. Are you seeing any sort of leaf symptoms at this point? Do the leaves look pretty normal, or are you seeing any sort of weird distortions?
The leaves look great. The fruit is large. You know, it's the thornless blackberry.
Sure.
And the fruit is large, and everything's good except for it just looks funny, and I'm wondering whether to eat it or not.
Any symptoms on the canes at all? You see any spotting on the canes?
No.
Okay.
And in fact, no.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I would watch for insect pests in that in your patch. If you see anything, you could collect some of those up, dump them in a little bit of alcohol to kill them, and then send them into our insect diagnostician, Phil Pelletieri. And actually, if you go to my website, Phil's address is the same as mine. So he could take a look and see whether it might be insect-related. And then if not, he could forward it on to me, and we could take a look at it in the clinic.
Okay.
Perfect. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about plant diseases today, we've zeroed in a little bit on late blight in tomatoes and potatoes, but we're taking certainly other questions as well. And you are encouraged to join in with your own question, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org as we visit with plant pathologists from the UW, Amanda Gevins and Brian Huddleston. I'm Larry Mueller. Erica Janik, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Zeroing in on plant diseases with Amanda Gevins and Brian Huddleston. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. Before we go back to the phones, Amanda, I wonder, you know, I someone told me, it might have been AJ, told me that it is, by law, you have to destroy plants that have late blight. Is that correct? And let's talk a little bit more about It's sort of the what a home gardener can do on the management side of things.
Sure. So, yeah, the debt cap within the state does have some restrictions in place for some of the first finds of late blight in the state. And generally, the recommendation, you know, by me as an extension pathologist is that the plants would be destroyed because they can't be cured and they're just lending to the bigger problem of disease pressure. But DATCAP does have rules in place so that first find, generally they will request that be or order that be destroyed. But as additional finds come in, it does become a disease to be managed within the state. We certainly can't ask all growers of infected crops to destroy everything. And at times when the find is potentially a 30-acre field or more, and it's minor, it very much so is a disease to be managed and not a disease to be destroyed. So now we are a bit beyond that step now, having five counties with reports in it, and it is a disease to be managed. But still, the recommendation stands for a home gardener that is looking to eliminate the disease this season and give them better chances of a disease-free or late blight-free 2011. That recommendation is to remove the plants. And with that said, there are various ways in which a plant can be destroyed. I say removed. That's simple enough to pull it out and bag it and destroy it by heat killing. But there are other methods. If a grower has a number of plants, in some cases I've seen home gardeners with up to 50 plants or more. They're quite ambitious. That's a lot of work to pull every plant out.
Yeah.
And so they may choose to cut the plant off at the base. You know, especially if they have these plants staked in a row, they may just cut them at the base. And apply herbicide, and that'll kill the plants. They may choose to use a propane torch and flame the plants and burn them in place. And that's actually the best method because it's a quick kill.
Yeah.
With herbicides, you're killing that plant slowly, and the pathogen will continue to produce spores and create more disease pressure. So there are other ways of killing that plant material that is infected. That is also the best or the only method of eliminating the pathogen from that system, so that they don't have risk of overwintering or overseasoning the late blight pathogen for 2011.
Yeah, Mike emailed us and said he had blight last year and plowed it under. What about that?
Well, depending on how deep that plow occurred. If it is too deep, and we did have an early snowfall, and that will allow some plant material to remain viable and that it's still respiring and it's still alive. And when that's happening, the pathogen is also can also still remain viable. And so if it was a shallow till, likely it was frost killed. If it was a deep till, there may be some concern there that it was buried and the core temperatures were high enough to keep that tissue alive.
Okay.
Also, we've talked about issues with composting material as well in the past, so we don't recommend that for home gardeners. If you have any indication that you have late blight, we do not recommend composting that material.
By the way, can you eat the tomatoes or the potatoes from late blight?
Well, that's a very good question. That's certainly the next wave of questions that we always receive when late blight is found. And a late blight infected tomato fruit, it should not be eaten. It certainly, folks have eaten them, and it doesn't appear to be a human pathogen. But, there's not a lot of data on that. And the secondary concern is that an infected fruit is one that can also harbor bacterial pathogens. And certainly there are a number of human pathogens in that category of organisms. And therefore, it's also a risk when considering the canning process. And we do not recommend that late blight infected tomato fruits are canned. With that said, a plant may be infected. You may have leaves and stems showing late blight symptoms, but the fruit are healthy and do not have any spots on them. Those can be harvested and eaten fresh. They generally don't store as long. Folks have said they have an off taste. And again, I don't recommend that those be canned for safety reasons.
Let's go to Amy in Port Wing next. Amy, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much. So I ran out and even pulled out an onion that I'm having problems with. My onions are spotted. The green leaves are spotted, and they're dying back from the tip. And when I pulled it up, the roots seem a little small, but they're not too bad. But they're looking really horrible.
And what do these spots look like on the leaves? Are they oval shaped? Are they brown, black, purple? What do you see?
Okay, they're white. They're white. They're not powdery at all. It's more like the green chlorophyll is just coming away from it. And the spots are all sorts of really strange shapes. It's not like it's not like they're necessarily real round. You know what I mean? They're kind of long and
oblong, yes, as onion leaves are.
And, you know. And when I actually, I'm going to tear apart this a little bit. Yeah, the leaf part is kind of brown and nasty on the tip. And
is it soft at all? Is it kind of a slimy rod, or does it seem dry and there's just spotting on the leaves?
It's more on the dry side.
Okay.
Okay, we're
very
we're
discouraging. I have
Brian and I are looking at each other, scratching our heads.
I haven't planted any onions there for 7 years. We have really long crop rotations, you know. So
great. That's good.
It hasn't been there anything there for 7 years, and last year it was beans. So
yeah, there are a few things that come to mind. There are several onion diseases that are out and about right now, and of those that I see most commonly at this time, none of them would be consistent with the symptoms you're describing. So I'm wondering if they're, you know, just a cultural practice that may have impacted growth, or you know, at times there's an insect called thrips that will give kind of a white or a bleached look to the leaves, but they're much smaller in size. And it wouldn't give an elongated lesion or a symptom on the leaves. So that's not consistent either. Brian, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, if it's starting with the tips back, I'm almost wondering if there's something, a low-grade root infection that's just limiting water uptake to the tips of those leaves that might be causing some general dieback. But that's just a guess. Do you see any browning on those roots at all at the tips?
You know what? Now that I look at it, it's not that healthy of a root.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I wonder about the compromised root system, and that'll inhibit water uptake, and that can cause some leaf dieback, and that might cause at least some of the browning that you're talking about on the leaves.
Do you think it could be? My friend buys lots of onions from Texas, and then we buy them from her, and they came up, and they were shipped up here in May, and we were having heavy snowstorms, so we couldn't put them in right away. And so it took a little bit for me to get them in the ground. Not outrageously so, but usually they come and they get put in the ground right away.
Yeah. Well,
this is one that, you know, I'd recommend sending in a sample to the disease diagnostics clinic and let us have a further look, and we'll evaluate the root systems and give you a better response. Sometimes it's hard to tell, give a confirmed diagnosis with descriptions such as this.
Yeah. So if you go to for the address and all the information, you can go to the website, which is pddc.wisc.edu. And actually, it's a pretty simple matter. Don't send on a Friday or
That's usually best if not to send it on early in the week. The worst thing that can possibly probably if you mail it like on a Wednesday or Thursday, that's probably the worst possible thing because it ends up being delivered on Saturday and sits in our mail room over the weekend. So then we end up with what we call slime in a bag on Monday mornings. So early shipping in the week
is
Monday is always good.
All right. There you have it. Thank you, Amy. And Renee in Whitewater, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Renee.
Hi. I have one main question, but just talking about the late blight, I wondered if my tomatoes got wilt because of all this rain. Do they also have to be destroyed?
No. So other plant diseases that are much more common in the state, and if wilt, depending on what caused that, wilt is a general symptom that can be a response to disease at the roots or some other type of root damage. So it depends what caused that. But any other disease symptom that a plant may be exhibiting does not warrant, you know, digging it up or destroying it. But late blight is one it's quite exceptional that does contribute more spores when it remains in the ground.
All right. Okay.
And in terms of wilt, what are you talking about by wilt? Is it from the top down? Or are you seeing that kind of defoliation from the bottom up?
Sort of the tips kind of curling over and drooping, and okay. then eventually the whole plant.
Yeah. Do you have a walnut tree anywhere close to your garden?
No, not at all.
Okay, because that's one of the things that can cause wilting. The other thing, a couple of diseases that can cause some problems. There are two soil-borne fungi. One's called verticillium. Another one is fusarium. And those can invade the water-conducting tissue inside the plant and block it, and that will cause wilting as well. Could be root rots. We've been seeing a lot of a bacterial disease on tomato called bacterial canker, that if that gets severe enough, you could see some general wilting symptoms as well. So if you really want to know what's going on with that particular plant, get a sample into the clinic. We can take a look at it for you.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dave and Phillips, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I've got a question about some corn. Every year I plant corn, and I do rotate my crops, and every year my corn has just been beautiful. This year, for some reason, I noticed when the corn came up and it got, oh, I don't know, maybe about high as your calf, I noticed some yellowing on the bottom leaves. As the plant grew, the leaves began to turn yellow further up the plant. I went online and I started looking up some diseases for corn, and I found two that I thought it might be. I can't even pronounce their names. My corn is stunted, and my ears are already out. The plants don't seem to be producing as much corn ears as they normally would. And okay. I'm just wondering...
what it might be. Yeah.
What it might be. So I've got basically, like I said, yellowing leaves. Their kind of tendency to stay on the bottom of the plant, but there are several plants that do have it like mid-level yellowing leaves, and the leaves then eventually turn brown and die.
But there's no spotting or any other distinctive feature on the leaves, just a yellowing.
Just a yellowing, and then eventually turning brown and shriveling.
So certainly we look below ground for symptoms like that. One thing comes to mind, and you can let us know, but did you have any standing water with all the rains that we had?
No, fortunately, I have good drainage in my in my garden.
Certainly, when corn receives too much water and those roots get starved for oxygen, and the nitrogen may leach, so that can give it yellowing effect.
Right.
But in this case, I'm even wondering about potentially nematodes.
That would be another thing. My first thought was maybe a nutrient problem from leaching from if you've had a lot of rain, which I'm assuming you have had, given most of the state has had a lot of rain this year. We have seen some issues with that, but nematodes would be another. Those are little tiny parasitic worms that will feed on the roots. So that's a possibility. You'd have to have a soil test performed to determine whether or not you have high levels or high enough levels to cause some problems in your corn crop.
Okay, if I had the nematodes, though, wouldn't it affect other plants around it?
Depends on the nematode.
Okay.
Some are more specific for corn than others.
Okay.
All right.
So you're thinking it might be a nematode issue then?
Possibly. The symptoms seem consistent with that.
Yeah.
Okay. And should I expect an abnormal corn harvest because of that then?
Well, given that the symptoms you've defined, it sounds as if the plant growth and development has already been impacted, and that will that's not going to clear itself up if the plant has already had that much stress through the season. So, I'd say if it looks like your ears are, you mentioned they're a bit short or small.
One three-letter word answer, yes.
Alrighty.
Unfortunately.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Joe in Bayfield, let's go to you now. Hi, Joe.
Yes, hello from Bayfield.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, my beans. We have a 30-foot garden down in a meadow, and it's fairly sandy. And we've always gotten great beans, and we put aged cow poop on it, and we've always gotten great vegetables. Well, this year we have great leaves in the pole beans, but no beans.
Did you fertilize a lot this year?
No.
No fertilizer?
No.
Okay.
But some of the leaves, I'd say about midway up, are being eaten. You can see in the middle of these leaves, not the edges but the middle, there will be some chewing of some kind, and then, of course, around that circle, it's dead.
Little of that, though, wouldn't affect the fact that you don't have any beans, I don't think. Well, I'm not the expert. What do you guys think?
I'm looking at Amanda. Amanda's looking at me, and it's like we would have passed this off to the other one. I'm worried. You said you use a lot of cow manure?
We put aged cow poop, and we have so much sand that we put lime in fall, and then we put the cow poop over that in before we plant it.
You wouldn't think that would be, I mean, it sounds like too much nitrogen.
Yeah, that was my first thought, but it's whether or not that aged cow manure is providing excessive nitrogen so that the plants are producing a lot of foliage rather than flowers. You have any thoughts, Amanda?
I don't.
That makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, that's my thought. Oftentimes when, certainly when I'm dealing with ornamental problems, when we see things that don't flower, it's oftentimes because people are applying too much nitrogen. What you might want to do is consider a soil nutrient test before you add additional fertilizer, manure, or whatever, just to make sure you don't have too high of a level of certain types of nutrients.
And okay, I'm sorry, what did you say?
I would do a soil fertility test. Just visit your county extension office. They should have packets that you can get to collect soil and then send it down to one of our testing labs. And I normally recommend this relatively routinely, about maybe every 2, 3, 4 years in home gardens, just to get kind of a baseline of where you are nutrient-wise so that you're not over-fertilizing.
Okay.
Okay, and its neighbor, the peas, are doing fine.
Yeah,
I'm just not sure. That my first thought is fertility issues, but I don't know for certain about that.
Yeah, you get a soil test. Have that taken care of. And thank you very much for calling, Joel. Rich and Sullivan, let's turn to you now. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Some of us are fall croppers, and this year that, you know, some of us start, like, various cabbage and broccoli in mid-season for a new fall crop. But this year we've done that with tomato seedlings. This is Jefferson County, and I don't know if that's one of the areas affected, but our plants that are already in the garden sure look like they are affected, but we have our own healthy seedlings, and I know as experts you're going to say, well, I hope you chose short season varieties, fella, because and we did, but does it make any sense to put a new crop of pretty strong tomato seedlings in a good area away from what I'm talking about? I mean, most of us gardeners wait all year to get a tomato, and short of our dogs dying or something like that, this disease is like an awful thing. I mean, it really is. So.
So the plants that you currently have in the garden, you feel that those have late blight at this time?
I've been listening pretty carefully, and what has happened is the plants have defoliated from the ground up.
Okay, so that's likely not late blight, but one of these other more commonly seen diseases in tomato in the state. That this summer, because the weather is favoring it, they're much worse than normal. And those would include things like septoria, some of the bacterial diseases, and early blight, potentially, if it started on the bottom foliage and moved its way up the plant. So, you know, the source of those diseases can be quite local in any debris left from past gardening, but it also can move in from other areas on the air. So even your best cleanup efforts at times are not going to hold up to the aerial movement of other pathogens. So what to do? You've got healthy transplants you're considering putting in this garden. You have plants that are currently affected with these other foliar pathogens. You know, the recommendation, of course, is if those older plants are, if they're bearing fruit and it looks like they're going to give you a yield before the summer's out and you're wanting to manage them, I would try to manage that disease best in those mature plants, and you know, set out the transplants, but maybe get some, you know, as much as I don't prefer to recommend fungicides to home gardeners, it may be wise to put some protectants out on those younger transplants.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks a lot for calling, appreciate it. And Eunice in Manitowoc, hi to you.
Good morning. I didn't hear the first part of the program, and you're talking about the late blight. Last year we had tomatoes that got like a blister on, and I was told that was late blight.
On the bottom of the tomato plant?
No, on the whole tomato, yeah.
On the fruit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, late blight wouldn't cause a symptom that would be described as a blister.
But they were fine, that's more like and then all of a sudden right. They developed these spots, and they got kind of like a blister and mushy underneath.
Hmm. Yeah, on the bottom. Blossom end rot, I bet.
No, it was the whole tomato. It was
it dark in color? What was the color of the fruit?
It was the same as the tomato. It just looked like blisters.
Oh.
I was told that was the late blight.
Was the skin raised up?
Yeah, like a blister.
Wart-like, okay.
Hmm. Yeah, it doesn't sound like late blight because normally you get kind of a brown discoloration to the tissue that's infected.
Oh, brown.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't remember that the leaves were affected either. It was just that the tomatoes, even after they were picked, they started to do that.
Hmm.
What else would that be?
Sometimes when you have distorted fruits, although I don't see this so much on tomatoes, but on cucurbits, so cucumbers and other sorts of fruits, some of the viral pathogens will cause kind of a blistering on the fruits. Usually on tomatoes, when I've seen viral infections, it's more blotchy discolorations, kind of yellowing, or sometimes we'll see ring patterns on the fruits. But blistering is not something I've normally seen on tomato fruits.
No, I have not either, unless it's insect-related.
No, that's a possibility, I suppose. If you see it again, that would be something I would recommend you get a sample into our clinic for us to take a look at so we can give you a better diagnosis. We'd have to probably do some additional work with that in the clinic.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And just to conclude, late blight's out there, and we need to be watching our plants. What again do we look for again for late blight?
For symptoms, we want to look for spots. Generally, it's seen first on the upper foliage since it is coming in the air. You'll see it on the top leaves or stems, and it's a dark brown to black, oily or wet looking symptom on the leaves and stems. If it is on tomato fruits, you'll see a brown to golden colored, leathery textured rot on the fruit, and that does stay firm, and you'll often see that produces sort of rings of growth on the fruit. And at times, both on the leaves, stems, and fruit, you may see the pathogen sporulating, and that's sort of a white, fuzzy growth in addition to these other darkened symptoms.
All right. There you have it. So keep an eye out for that late blight, everybody. And I tell you what, Amanda and Brian, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Larry.
We'll do it again with them. Amanda Gevins, who is a UW Extension plant pathologist. She works in potatoes and vegetables. Brian Huddleston, also a plant pathologist, works in the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Again, that website is PDDC, two Ds there, PDDC.WISC.EDU. And we'll, I'm sure, be talking more about plant diseases as the summer progresses, and probably right through to fall, be my guest. Coming up, we're going to talk about some archaeological research that's going on or will be going on in Trempealeau County. Ernie Bozart and Danielle Bandon will be our guests next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.